And so I think that for us is important too, is to always bring it back to trying to create something that is affordable and is nutritious and meets consumer expectation for what you would get from conventional salmon.
Green Hero. Hi, friends, and welcome to the Green Hero podcast. This is Ricard, founder of Green Hero, your go-to source for making plant-based eating easy and enjoyable. Each week, we'll be digging into the inspiring journeys of people who live a plant-based lifestyle to tease out the most effective and fun ways to add more plants to your life.
Green Hero. Green Hero. Green Hero.
Today's guest is PhD and senior scientist at cell-based company Wildtype, Alexander Samocha. Alexander works at the intersection of novel cell line development, molecular biology, and large-scale cultivation to build towards the future of food. His current focus is to cultivate the most sustainable salmon on Earth. I'm really pumped for this episode as we again will dig into the complex topic of cell-based food. Here's Alexander Samocha. Alexander, welcome, and thank you for joining us on our podcast. I'm so excited to have you on our show. How's it going, and where are you calling in from today?
Hi, well, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me, Ricard. It was nice connecting with you at the Reducetarian Summit, where we first met, got to talk a little bit about being on a plant-based or alternative protein lifestyle. I'm doing well. It's a sunny Friday afternoon in the Bay Area, which is always appreciated, especially during the summer. We get a lot of fog, so yeah. Doing well and happy, excited for the weekend and really excited to be here.
All right. That sounds great. And as you mentioned, we met at the Reducetarian Summit, sipping some coffee in the speaker's lounge together. And that's kind of where I first learned about Wildtype and the work that you are doing with cell-based salmon. And I mean, maybe to start, and as you are a scientist, maybe we should really nerd out on this and dig deep into what this really is. Like, what is cell-based food really? Because it's not plants and it's not from an animal. Like, how do you go about like explaining this to people?
Yeah, this is a fundamental challenge, I think, of our industry and Wildtype's objective in general. But I'm happy to be here as a scientist, and I'll try to have a high-level view, and then happy to go deeper as the conversation proceeds. But essentially, you're right. We aren't plant-based, and we're not strictly animal meat. So what are we? What we do is we start with taking tissue from an animal. We specifically focused on salmon as our first species to work with for a lot of environmental and sustainability concerns that I'd be happy to talk about later. We isolate cells from this tissue, and then we work with those cells to make them grow faster, grow quicker, grow in cheaper nutrient feed, and have the cells essentially grow forever. And so we do this completely outside of the animal and grow those in our workspace. And so what we do from there is then take these cells, get them growing in these giant brewery-like cultivators, kind of think of a giant beer tank. And we take those cells that are produced from this, and then we mix them with plant-based scaffolding. So this is a 3D structure of plant proteins. So a lot of the plant proteins you or your audience might be familiar with. And we structure those so that when we mix the cells with the plant-based proteins, the cells can attach, grow, divide, mature, and turn into the cells you would expect to find in a conventional salmon fillet, like muscle cells or fat cells. And then through this process, it's a transformative thing, and it turns into what we view as our, you know, wild type salmon saku, our wild type cultivated salmon.
I get it. Okay. So I think it's so interesting. You say like you extract cells from an animal. And I mean, even before that, maybe we can back up even more. Like, where do the cells even come from? Because it feels almost like, well, the cells are in the animal. They must have come from somewhere before you can kind of extract them, right?
Sure. We've done a lot of work into cell line exploration. And that's actually where I started at Wildtype. Hmm. Essentially, we've worked with partners to source tissue from salmon from any different number of places. Again, you can think of selecting tissue from wild salmon caught in the wild, or you can source tissue from some of these farms. So farm-raised salmon, we can get, say, early juveniles or even fertilized embryos. And so we've tried a number of different approaches. But for us, what worked was a combination of a whole number of different techniques. But in our workhorse cell line, the cell line that's currently being used to grow our hundreds and thousands of pounds of cultivated salmon, actually came from a juvenile coho salmon, which is about the size of my index finger.
Mm.
And so the cells we isolated from this one juvenile salmon have lasted now over pretty much 4 years, the duration of my time at Wild Type, and have gone into making now, you know, hundreds and thousands of pounds of salmon. So something that weighed no more than a few ounces now has produced exponentially more tissue or exponentially more cultivated meat than I could have even imagined at first.
Yeah. No, it's so crazy when you talk about like isolating the cells and then you kind of duplicate them and you're able to grow this muscle tissue, right? So I've heard as well that you can't duplicate cells just forever, that there needs to be some kind of extraction happening that they decreases in some kind of in quality. Is that correct? Or you are able to do more of a exact copy, like we would copy a digital file almost?
Sure. Right. The control paste of a cell. So, right, this is a fundamental challenge for our field. But through a combination of kind of targeted efforts and non-targeted efforts, we actually managed to create what we call a cell line. And that line word there is the important part, which means that these cells are immortalized, which means that given the right, you know, nutrient feed of fats, sugars, minerals, the same kinds of things the animal would need, these cells are able to divide infinitely. And so this process can happen spontaneously. It can happen just through, you know, kind of random events that happen in our cells as we culture them in our various vessels. But it can also be directed via specific actions like genetic mutation. But for our current workhorse line and our V1 product, the cells had no directed genetic modification. These cells naturally occurred to immortalize, which helped us a lot into trying to understand these cells and push them further in terms of making more and more cells to be integrated into our product.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. And how do you check the quality of the cells? Because I assume as well, when you're like, hey, we're going to produce some cells that will become salmon meat later, we also need to know that there's like high quality cells. I assume like, are you looking at an animal to see if they get sick or anything like that to understand like the quality of what you have extracted?
So it's interesting. There's different challenges for cultivated meat than conventional animal space. Essentially, what we do with the cells is we can look at them via any number of different parameters. So when we started in the very early days, we kind of took a snapshot of these cells, looking at their genes and their proteins, like what kinds of cells were these? And we knew from those different analyses that these cells were of the same family of cells as pre-muscle cells and pre-fat cells, what are called mesenchymal cells, for any of you who might remember, you know, high school or college biology if you took it. And then from there, as we cultivate them in these giant brewery-like tanks, we can look at them for their health in general, like are the cells happy? Are they sad? Are the cells alive? Are they dying? And we can also look at them, say, under the microscope when we take samples to say, do these cells look healthy? And those are any number of different visual indicators can help us to determine that. And the final step, when they're mixed with this plant-based scaffold and grown mature, we can also look at the cells there and say, do they look like these happy, healthy coho salmon cells that we would expect them to? Mm-hmm. So yeah, we have a number of different steps along the process. But for the most part, these cells have looked really robust and pretty strong growers, which is, again, really good for us.
Yeah. I think it's a pretty interesting visual to say, imagine like a happy cell. Like, what does it look like? So,
Very much so.
Yeah. So you're able to kind of get these cells to grow. And what I'm curious about as well is just that, so a lot of the meats that kind of people have are like plant-based meats that people are talking about has been like a lot of like impossible food, beyond meat, that has been kind of a patty, which is a little bit like not so much like texture maybe. It's more like kind of a ground beef imitation. How do you look at something as specific as like a fillet of salmon has a lot of like really fine textures to it? So how do you approach something like that? Is that something that you're able to like produce right now, or how is the texture, for example?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And I think, honestly, this is a bit of pride for myself and my colleagues' work, our crewmates, as we call them at Wild Type. We keep the nautical theme throughout a lot of our language here, is that I think this is what sets us apart from a lot of other cultivated meat, is we have this structured salmon saku. So our first product is a cultivated salmon saku, as if you would use to prepare, say, nigiri or sashimi for sushi preparation, can be used in poke preparations. And the difference for us, and I think what might be interesting to you, Ricard, is a lot of this initial structure is determined by these plant-based proteins that we organize to resemble this kind of 3D shape of this salmon saku. And then our cells send each other signals once they recognize the structure to then organize into these, let's say, aligned fibers or structured proteins and structured cells. And so I think that's a big differentiator for us in that as an early member of the prototype review committee, I got to taste a lot of our early prototypes and really the combination of the cells and their proteins in combination with the plant-based proteins really has married to the two beautifully and created this textured product that we now have.
Yeah. So it's also interesting when you say that you guys are using also these plant-based like scaffolding for these salmon cells, because what you're creating then is like, that's something completely new, right? It's not just like salmon cells. You're actually taking some kind of plants into this as well to create something new. And do you see that it is like an imitation? Imitation might not be the right word, but like more like a duplicating what a salmon would be? Or do you feel like we are actually doing something completely new? Like, how are you seeing it? Like, maybe even from a more philosophical standpoint, you know?
Sure. We have had a lot of philosophical conversations about what is meat and what is salmon? Like, you go to a sushi restaurant and you're eating a piece of sushi and you take a bite into this, you know, conventional salmon piece. Meat is 70% water, right? Because all life is 70% water. And then from there, we think about the proteins that make it up. And so your question is an interesting one. So for now, we use the plant-based scaffold basically just to direct the cells. And then the cells take over and do their thing. And so by the end of our process, what started as a small amount of cells that are placed onto this plant-based scaffold, the cells grow, divide, and mature. And by the end, the plant proteins really just serve as guiding signals to tell the cells how to grow and divide. Of course, there will still be small amounts of plant protein left over, but it is a neat, unique hybrid. But I think it's a way for us to get around some of the challenge of growing cells in three dimensions is to use this. And we chose plant-based proteins because sustainability is one of our key missions at Wildtype, and the sourcing and nutritional benefits of plant-based proteins, I think, would be better than constantly needing to go back to, say, the salmon itself to get salmon proteins to structure those. So like as soon as we get our cells from that original salmon we dissected on Christmas Eve in 2018, we haven't had to go back to the salmon again, right? This has been a self-sustaining process. So no, it's an interesting philosophical question. And I have a lot more of these. But to me, this, when I think of conventional salmon, our cultivated salmon is the same thing. It's the same fat content. It's the same proteins. It's the same nutritional profile. It gives the same texture. And it comes from salmon cells.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. And the thing with these products that are from animals in the beginning, you know, like even now if we specifically to salmon, we talk about farmed salmon or wild-caught salmon, for example. But I mean, these companies that produces the salmon, they don't really talk about like the texture of like the muscle tissue or cells or anything like that. They have these very simple ways of talking, like meat that is grass-fed or something like that. Nobody is really thinking about like, oh, I'm consuming this really specific muscle tissue right now. So how do you think that from like a branding perspective almost, or like for people to understand what this is, like you can't really use those words. So like, how do you create a vocabulary around this for people to kind of adapt to this very new product?
Right. Fantastic question. I think for us, it starts fundamentally from a research and a development perspective where we have a really robust tissue engineering team and food science team that works in conjunction with my group, the cell biology team, to from the ground up understand what consumers expect from a piece of sushi, right? From a piece of salmon that they'd get in a store or get in a restaurant. And so for us, we envision the vocabulary as being the same vocabulary you would use for meat, because from our point of view, it is meat. It's salmon cells. It's the same nutrition. I think the challenge for us, though, is, right, say when a fish processor collects a piece of salmon saku from, you know, a wild caught or a farmed salmon, they don't necessarily think about the texture, the nutritional benefits profile. They're just, you know, collecting this piece of meat. For us, we really want to carefully titrate that to match consumer expectation and hopefully to exceed and to create something better. And I think that kind of gets into the rest of our mission, where we are working towards and have made significant progress towards achieving a nutritional equivalence in kind of all of the categories you would expect, but our salmon will come without the microplastics, without the parasites and antibiotics and other, you know, ocean-based and water-based contaminants that we see in a lot of farmed salmon, or even salmon caught in the ocean. And so I think that for us is important too, is to always bring it back to trying to create something that is affordable and is nutritious and meets consumer expectation for what you would get from conventional salmon.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm 100% on board with like that you will be able to produce that, right? I'm more like thinking about the perception from the public of how they kind of understand what this product is, because you could also say like, here's wild type salmon free of microplastics, even though that it would be impossible to have microplastics as it's grown in the lab, right? But like that you can use a vocabulary that people understand for them to kind of, oh, this is actually something that I could be purchasing. I'm just thinking about this thing. I mean, it's also the, like beer, for example, which is also kind of a lab grown thing, but nobody associates beer with like a lab, like lab grown, I don't know, a lab grown drink, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a challenging question. For us, we try to use a differentiator. There's no one great term that works, but cultivated is, I think, the one that we've settled on, because that indicates to us that we've really spent the time and attention. You know, cultivating means growing, right? We've grown the salmon for human consumption and human nutrition specifically. And so I think that opens the door to a lot of new kinds of vocabulary too, like traceability. Mm-hmm. Traceability isn't something we think about for conventional salmon. A lot of farmed salmon or even wild-caught salmon is often shipped overseas for processing and then comes back and we don't really know where it comes from or who handled it. We would envision a future for this salmon where you could almost scan a QR code on the salmon sako you're buying from your local grocer, and then you could see what facility the cells were grown in, what was the name of the tank even, who was the operator who placed it into the scaffold, how long it was in a facility to allow the cells to mature and grow, and then basically when it was shipped from our facility to the grocer. So I think there is sometimes maybe a disconnect for understanding that. And we sometimes have heard, you know, the classic, you know, skepticism of our technology. But I think that just comes from a lack of understanding. And that's what we hope to do, is just to explain the process of cells plus these scaffolds married together in perfect harmony. And then we talk about, hey, you know, this isn't a science project. We're creating food.
Yeah. No, for sure. I mean, I think cultivated is a really interesting way to say, instead of saying like cell-based, right? Like if you would say cultivated salmon. What I'm wondering is, I don't know if you've already run into this, but you know, in Europe, they've had a lot of problem with like, are we able to call like plant-based nut milk to call it milk? Because the dairy industry are lobbying saying like, hey, you can call it milk because milk is from cow or milk is from an animal. So you can't have milk from a nut, right? Do you think that that is something that is something that you might run into as well? That people will be like, hey, you are not making salmon, so you can't really call it salmon.
Sure. I think about this in two different ways. And absolutely, I you know, hear the pushback and understand that we are creating something new. But at the same time, I guess my initial response is that we are creating salmon, and we can call it salmon because there are literally salmon cells and salmon muscle proteins. And so we are salmon. We're not this new product. But I appreciate that there's the difference. And so I think for us, that first word, cultivated, builds this kind of brand identity to that, you know, we aren't farmed, we aren't wild caught, we're something new. And that provides all the same kinds of positives that you would get from your conventional meat options, but also offer something new. And so I think that sometimes, like, you know, it gets into sticky situations. I know sometimes like the beef industry is trying to have things not called beef or even using the word meat. And so for right now, I think the simplest way to think about it for us is cultivated salmon. And we know that we have good justifications for those. And we've also had a lot of talks with the FDA, and we're nearing the final stages of getting that approval. And, you know, the Food and Drug Administration regulate seafood for consumption in the US. And so I feel like that also will be kind of like the final chapter in the book, that, you know, we've been approved, we're safe for consumption, we are a seafood product, but just a new and exciting one that we hope can sometimes fill in the gaps for people who maybe want to reduce the amount of conventional salmon that they eat, or, you know, begin a transition to, you know, healthier or cleaner options.
Yeah. And that it's super interesting. I mean, for me, it's a question we talk a lot about with the guests that are on the podcast that are more plant-based, because the word plant-based doesn't even exist in every language. Like vegan exists, but not plant-based, which is kind of the euphemism of vegan, right? So it's a really interesting thing to just talk about language and like how we define things and how important that is for this transformation to happen. But let's dig more into the sustainability then, because you're saying like, hey, this is like so much better for the environment. So how much better is it for the environment? And like, why should people like jump aboard this to say like, this is a huge difference?
Yeah, totally. I think I'll start with maybe a little bit of the doom and gloom with the way that salmon is collected in the current era and then what we hope to achieve down the line. So right now, I guess the biggest outstanding question and what a lot of people, including myself, didn't really think about before joining Wildtype was, is salmon sustainable? And not to inundate you with too many factoids, I have them ready if you're interested for, you know, the whole laundry list. But basically, the long and short of it is both conventional, you know, commercial fishing and farmed salmon are not sustainable. Both have a huge environmental impact. So deep sea trawling for, say, fishing produces more greenhouse gases than all of commercial aviation. 90% of the ocean's fish population have been depleted due to commercial fishing. And so then you think maybe, okay, well, farmed salmon is a better option. But farmed salmon are farmed both on land and in sea. And that creates environmental footprints in both places. And due to other concerns with the environment as it currently stands, waters are getting warmer. So these big commercial facilities are having to migrate further and further north or further and further south. And these giant pens in the ocean where they hold the salmon to allow them to grow creates essentially what occurs as this dead zone where all the nutrients are depleted because you have such a high concentration of fish in such a limited amount of area. And so there are lingering environmental concerns for that too, because it leaves a pretty huge footprint. And so for us, what we hope to achieve is something that has a much smaller footprint. So as we are pre-market and we're still building out our production facilities, we don't have a full life cycle analysis or have fully built our water recycling pipelines yet. But this is something that was built into the fundamental DNA of our company and something that we have thought about at every step of the process. And so for us, the sustainability conversation comes in that we can operate in a much smaller footprint than farmed salmon. And we're just producing, I think ultimately for me, I guess the final note of this is we're just producing the parts of the salmon that people eat. We're just producing the meat. And so it goes from cells in this nutrient mix with fats, proteins, and amino acids and other, you know, minerals. And then it gets put into sustainably sourced plant-based proteins. And then that combination, we hope, reduces a much lower, you know, carbon footprint, water consumption footprint, and it's much better for the environment.
Yeah. No, I mean, I totally understand that. And I'm so curious about cell-based food and really how it can change our food systems, because it's such a tremendous impact on our environment. So just to understand a little bit better as well, like how do the lab look like? And like these tanks that you have to grow the salmon in, like how big are they? And like, what does it take to produce like a pound of salmon? Maybe it's like something that people will be like, a pound is like this big, you know, like the size that you need and time that you need to do that. Like, what does that look like?
Sure. So the rough overview of our facilities are the cells start in basically shaking vessels to scale them up to get them ready for these large like beer like fermenter cultivators. These are kind of stainless steel tanks. These can range from as small as, say, in our production, from 50 liters up to what we hope to target is something like, you know, thousands of liters of volume. So really large volumes. Mm-hmm. And then those cells will be collected from this nutrient feed, condensed into smaller vessels, and then basically placed into the plant-based scaffolds. These are made in kind of an assembly line fashion. And then those are mixed and allowed to incubate and grow over time. We're constantly changing our cellular yield to your second question here. We're still figuring out how many cells we can get in the same volume of media and how rapidly we could produce our scaffolds. So we don't have an exact number of, say, how many liters of media or how many liters of water go into producing 1 pound of meat. But we've come such a long way in terms of where we started that, you know, every week now we're producing, you know, pounds of salmon, and we'll soon be producing enough to supply early restaurants who, you know, have agreed to partner with us to get cultivated salmon to the people.
Mm-hmm. It's super fascinating. And is there any way that people can try this? Is it up for consumption? Are you that far along that you guys at the lab, you have like Saturday salmon and like that you have, you get to get home, take home a little bit salmon and try it out every week?
Yeah. So almost every week we have tastings. We have an in-house chef now who's been hired full-time to really work with the product, figure out the best preparations and, you know, seasonings and, you know, whether it's best in a spicy salmon roll or is it best as just a piece of nigiri. We have tastings on Fridays, but I'd say for the people who are listening, the best way to find out is we do have a wait list, basically a newsletter list that we send out. And if you sign up for this wait list, I know even just recently, they announced a surprise tasting for people in San Francisco that people who, I guess, responded to our social media posts would be entered for a chance to have these tastings. So yeah, every week, whether it's our crewmates or potential investors or interested chefs, our distribution partners, and now even, you know, fans or people who follow along social media are given the opportunity to taste this. So we're getting out there. It's exciting. We've come a long way in the 3.5 years I've been there, for sure.
I hear you. Yeah. So people who's listening, go to Wild Tap's website and sign up. See if you guys can get to try this. And is it only local to San Francisco, the tastings, or do you also ship product anywhere in the United States or even cross borders?
So right now, we're not shipping anything yet, but we did have a tasting in New York City. So we're trying to establish a foothold all over the United States because we don't want this to just be limited to one geographic area. So we did have a tasting in New York City, and I'm sure there will be tastings in other cities in the months ahead. But yes, I'd say right now, because we are San Francisco-based, probably a great deal of tastings would be there, but we're trying to be all over.
Yeah. All right. And what do you think people can expect more on like a macro level of seeing, now let me use the right words, cultivated meat or cultivated animal products like what you guys are doing in the supermarket? Like, is this like a decade from now? And are there any things, like specific things that needs to happen, like FDA approvals or anything like that?
Right. So of course, FDA approval will be a huge step for us, right? I think a lot of different cultivated meat or cultivated protein companies are out here deep into conversations with the FDA, and we're excited about the progress we've made there. With regards to timing, right now we're targeting the US market as our launch market, and we don't have any dates to share at the moment, but right now we expect to announce more on our timing in this year, actually. But no, what I can say is that it won't be decades away. It'll be much sooner than that. I would expect pretty shortly you're going to start hearing about where to find wild type salmon. Yeah, super excited to have people other than myself and the people, our crewmates who have tried it, kind of get their first teeth on experience. I don't know, mouth on experience, the taste buds onto what wild type salmon is. Yeah.
Yeah. And is there, I know that Singapore seems to be very, they have already approved like cell-based meats and I assume fish as well. Is that also like a market where it's more like this is a great place to kind of test the product out? It's easier to go to market in a place like that?
Yeah, we're interested in all markets who are interested in us or markets who consume a lot of seafood. So of course, somewhere like Singapore would make sense with the amount of fish consumption there. Right now, we don't have anything to announce other than our US launch market, but we're interested to be global, right? Anywhere that wants us, we want to be.
Yeah. All right. And who do you think is doing something really cool in this market that are doing like cultivated meats that people should also like look for, that you think like these guys are really pushing the envelope and are doing like cool stuff?
Yeah, we have, there's so much excitement in the cultivated meat space. We have a lot of really cool other companies out there that are, you know, say not focusing on salmon like us, but focusing on other meats. I'll just name one because I think what they're doing is really exciting. Just across the bay, over in East Bay in the Bay Area, Upside Foods is doing some really exciting stuff with their first product. And I know they built out and showed off their kind of first production facility, and I have talked a lot about, they're being very transparent with their process, which is something that we at Wild Type try to do too. So yeah, really excited about Upside, but so many other competitors are doing really exciting things. And I think the space is going to look pretty different even in the next year or two.
All right. Sounds great. Well, where can people find you online? Or maybe not just you, but also so Wild Type as well. So they can like stay tuned to when there's stuff coming out.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, my marketing and PR people would definitely get on my case if I didn't say again to please join the wait list. That's the best way to hear about updates about what we're doing, new pictures of different preparations by our chefs and partners, and also give you a chance to be at these surprise tastings. Then wildtypefoods.com is our website, and we're Wild Type Foods on both Twitter and Instagram and LinkedIn, if you want to go that way too. And yeah, there's a lot of good content across there. And I just want to say one thing quickly as an aside, Ricard. I know that the work that you do in this podcast really targets people who are interested in this plant-based transition. And I really like the mission that you've put forth and what we heard about from the Reducitarian Summit. And I just want to reiterate, for what we're doing at Wildtype, we see it as a very similar kind of mission. Our salmon is not going to fully replace, you know, wild-caught or certainly farmed salmon. And it's not going to be the best option for people who don't want to consume meat, like maybe like yourself or some of your listeners. But we hope it's a way, it gives another option to really put the pressure off of our already strained food systems, give people an option to have something that's maybe a little cleaner, a little bit fresher, might have some of, you know, less pollutants, and maybe even someone who's trying to transition from, you know, strictly, you know, farmed salmon to a plant-based salmon option entirely. So we see ourselves as just presenting one more option, but hopefully an option that gets people excited because of that nutritional equivalence, because we use real salmon cells and we're creating this textured protein. And so I'm really just excited about the work that yourself and others are doing. And we hope we can fit into that space and start getting people excited who may have only been excited about plant-based proteins in the past to think about this alternative protein source, which is, you know, cultivated meat or cultivated salmon.
Yeah, that sounds super great. Yeah, I 100% agree with you there. I think that's a great note to close this interview on as well. So, Alexander, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much for the time and really excited to speak with you.
That was our episode for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. The Green Hero podcast was produced by Andrew Rojek and I'm your host, Ricard Bjerkdal. I'll see you next week for another conversation from our colorful plant-based world. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast or share this episode with a friend. If you haven't already, you can also find Green Hero in the App Store. Download our app and start enjoying a plant-based lifestyle today. You can also find us on the web at the URL greenhero.life and on Twitter and Instagram, where we operate under the handle Green Hero Life. All right, see you next week. Bye-bye.